I'm Jody Weitz, results and success coach, and these podcasts teach you how to make significant changes to live your dreams, make a positive impact on the world, and drop your regrets. It's time for you to get spectacular. Welcome back to Your Spectacular Life. I'm Jody Weitz, your professional coach, making sure everything in your life is no less than spectacular. I'm here with Fran Benjamin. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Jody. So good to be with you.
Oh, wonderful. Me too. Feel the same way. Let me tell you something about Fran. Fran Benjamin has guided people and organizations through strategic transformations for the past 20 years as head of people for Grail Inc. and leading diversity strategy at Airbnb. She's one of the founding partners at Good Works Consulting, where she helps make organizations work for good, for all. With the way DEI is discussed in our current political climate, Fran is providing strategies to her clients that are more relevant than ever. With her HR and organizational transformation backgrounds, she defends humanity in the workplace and balances effective messaging in potentially difficult company cultures. Wow, yay, that's all I can say. Thank you for being around, thank you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you know, have you always worked in diversity, or have you had to step that up in the last few years, 5 years? And, you know, we'll get to what you're doing now, but I'm curious about some of the transformation of DEI and, you know, cultural diversity.
Great question. I've not spent my entire career in the work of diversity, equity, inclusion, although I did start doing this work before it was cool. So I started my career 20 years ago in a global agribusiness, originally in commodity trading and supply chain. So very different than what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
But I was working in a Midwestern global agribusiness. And I was, if you remember from Sesame Street, that song, "One of these things is not like the other. One of these things just doesn't belong." I definitely was one of the things that didn't quite belong in that environment as a very flamboyant queer person navigating the sort of corporate navy blue suit wearing environment. So I started doing some work in addition to my full-time job for a department that was then called Valuing Differences. Mm-hmm. So we weren't even necessarily saying diversity at that point, mm-hmm. Or at least for that in that organization. And then it's been, you know, a circuitous path ever since then, running HR for a couple of life sciences companies in the Bay Area, in Big Four accounting and consulting. So I've been a bit all over, diversity, equity, inclusion has, I think, been the most constant thread throughout my career.
Goodness. You know, when you say threat, tell me what that means.
Yeah. So even in instances where my work, where I've not formally been in a diversity, equity, and inclusion role, I see the work that I do as requiring these concepts. So requiring that I contribute towards creating a diverse environment, creating an environment that is inclusive to all people, and creating one that treats folks equitably and fairly. And so even when running HR for these companies that I mentioned, I wove those concepts into the thread of my HR strategy. Or even, you know, in the early days in supply chain, I was conscientious for the the culture and climate of the team that I was a part of, or as I mentioned in Big Four Consulting, if I was doing work that included mergers and acquisitions, I was curious about, does the acquisition that's going through disproportionately negatively affect some folks based on their identities as compared to others? So it's always been this thread that has woven throughout my career.
And how back then, and I don't know if you want to mention a year or a span of years, but I'm curious in the early days in the blue suits and a very conservative environment, how did they respond to you speaking up and feeling very passionate about that diversity?
It was met in a variety of ways.
You're
The
very
response was
kind.
diverse.
The response was diverse.
Yes.
Oh.
This was I believe this was in maybe 2006 that this happened, in the organization that I was working for. We're actually filming right now in June, which is Pride Month, Gay Pride Month, in the US and abroad as well. There was a rainbow flag, in the center atrium of the corporation in which I was working in celebration. And in that year, this was before smart cameras and smartphones and all of that. I think while the majority of folks weren't in the office, the flag was cut down.
Oh, goodness.
So that was one end of the spectrum. But then on the other end of the spectrum, I was also really grateful because, I was very young and early in my career. And the executive team for the business unit that I was working with at the time paid for my attendance to a diversity conference. And I came back from that conference and presented to the executive team about my experience. I would say there were probably half of the room was a little bit deer in headlights. And the other half of the room was extremely supportive. And I think that in my experience, taking that support to the bank, like getting the allies, getting the sponsors, getting the mentors, where you can get them, and making good relationships and making good use out of those mentoring and caring relationships has definitely, at least for my career, made a huge impact. And I think made an impact on the culture of the work environments that I've been a part of.
You know, that's great. It's pretty amazing you had half of the executive team believing in you, saying, let's move forward, and you getting the green light, because probably the other half, it just takes time. And there's always going to be people who are never going to agree with the ideas that you're putting forth, but I think it's great that you got that 50%, and you probably used every ounce of energy in support of that 50%.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I think that it's an and I, we're talking about diversity, equity, inclusion here, though. I think that this is just a very basic stakeholder engagement and change management strategy as well, which is to identify those allies or champions for your work, irrespective of the discipline, and understand what makes them tick, understand what their motivations and interests are and what you're up to support you, particularly for folks that are early in their careers.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hearing that you're very passionate about supporting those who don't have a voice, or
Yeah.
maybe different, but that difference is, they're told to literally sweep it under the table, be like everyone else. And that's painful, psychologically damaging, and a number of other things. To be able to be yourself and to be transparent in any environment is really, it's a gift to be able to do that.
Yeah, and it's been a journey because it hasn't always felt safe for me to. And I know
Sure.
that there are probably many of your listeners for whom it doesn't feel safe to, it's sort of a cliche at this point, but I'll use the phrase bring your full self to work. And that's real. And particularly as kind of our social, socio-political environments become more tense, that felt sense of identity safety can be feel more fleeting. And so I do say that I have had the privilege of being able to share of myself throughout my career. It has certainly come with its costs, but I also rest on a lot of the and I'll use that word again, privileges that I have been granted. So you know, I've definitely been privileged to have been brought up with a variable sort of socioeconomic status, both middle class at times and then low income at times. But that helps. I'm privileged to be able to walk down the street at night in my as a white person and feel safe in my neighborhood in the way that I do. You know, like these privileges add up, and not everyone has the same access to that experience of safety. And so, but to your point, I am quite sensitive to the cost of there's a body of research that Kenji Yoshino conducted a number of years ago now called covering. The cost of covering any element of one's identity in the workplace can have these untold psychological impacts and frankly, productivity and creativity impacts. So not only is the person suffering, but the organization is suffering as a result of that person suffering. So whether it is I am a Black woman and I feel like I can't wear my natural hair to work, or whether it's me as a queer person and I can't talk about my partner or my gender at work, all of these things come with a cost at the water cooler, and a cost to innovation and productivity and profitability as well.
Exactly. Thank you for explaining that and really bringing that out. And now, are you working with Airbnb at this time, or have you consulted with them in the past? What's going on there? And I'm curious about if the current, I'm going to use your word, tense political, socio-political environment has shifted them at all.
You know, that's a great question. I worked for Airbnb just shy of a decade now ago. I'm not sure. The short answer is I'm not sure their current stance. I don't remain well connected to them. What I can tell you though is that when I worked there in 2016 and I was leading diversity strategy for the organization, and one of the questions that was posed to me was in a so this was in headquarters was in San Francisco, in a very different than the where I started my career in a mostly liberal environment, and I had folks coming to chat with me about you know, Trump was just elected, and as a Republican, I don't feel like I can belong in this environment. And so this introduces then for me this notion of the paradox of tolerance, the idea that an organization or a person or a group of people may not tolerate intolerance. And that was kind of the position that we had to use at that moment in time, is this notion of you and your beliefs, your ideologies are everything that makes you on the inside and on the outside is welcome here and has a place of belonging here. It's when your intolerance for others comes into the space and causes meaningful, and even if it's not meaningful harm, causes any harm, that's something that the organization can't tolerate. And so that was the conversation in 2016, and I would imagine that it might be resurfacing today.
Basically, your intolerance, not your tolerance is what you are focusing on. Is somebody's intolerance for somebody else's being who they are, both politically, sexual orientation, dress, etc., race, gender.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Exactly.
and that's what you bring out. So we've had a number of months. Trump is back in office. What have you seen so far as people? I mean, I'm hearing it all over. People are letting go of DEI in their companies, and I don't know if it's true. Some were saying they were forced into it. I think that's trying to get on the better side of some other people. I don't know what kind of strategy that is, but what have you seen in your role, working in HR and being a proponent of diverse cultures?
This is a great question, and I appreciate you asking it. My work now is solely focused on coaching and consulting. So the organization that I for which I'm the managing partner is called Good Works Consulting. We do organizational development and human capital consulting, executive coaching, but we center diversity, equity, and inclusion in all of that work that we do. So, as I mentioned earlier, this thread that I've woven throughout my career for these concepts gets woven into how I help my clients think about their organizational structure or new market entry or whatever large scale big that challenge that is before them. I'm curious about the lens for employee culture. I'm curious about the lens for belongingness for folks. So this It's been top of mind for me daily since January, because it's also been top of mind for my clients. And what I'll say is that many things have changed, but many more things remain the same that have changed. So what has changed is the rhetoric and the discourse space, both socially, politically, and social media. And some efforts to place barriers and blockades legally in the way of helping folks achieve great things, irrespective of their identities. And so, what we saw in January was that the executive branch of the federal government released an executive order, actually, a couple of them relevant to diversity, equity, and inclusion, one of which, though, called for the federal government to stop practices or programs with regards to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And some of the this also affected private companies that have federal contracts. What is surprising about that executive order, though, is that the language used in it and the concepts that it was advancing, in many ways, are consistent with the practices of diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioners for many decades now. So it said things like pursuing broad applicant and candidate pools. That makes a lot of sense to me
Yeah.
from a diversity standpoint.
So
It
were they
go ahead.
saying this is still allowed, broad pool, candidate pools? Were they trying to keep that in?
So what the executive order stated was that practices of diversity, equity, it's sort of asserting that practices of diversity, equity, and inclusion are actually discriminatory based on anti-discrimination law. And what it did not say outright, but what it is implying is that DEI practices cause discrimination against majority group members. And when I say majority group, I'm talking about whoever makes up the majority of the folks in any given environment, whether that's society or a company. And so it's sort of asserting that, the majority of a lot of organizations are comprised by white people. The majority of a lot of organizations are comprised by men. And so that diversity, equity, inclusion practices are in fact discriminatory against those majority group members. And so what the executive order might have been seeking to do is to limit practices that might, pursue recruiting at historically Black universities and colleges, and instead is using this language of broadness. It also tries to prohibit the concept of workforce balancing, which is using metrics to understand the demographics of your workforce so that they can be reflective of your customers or of the geography in which you operate, or of the United States, or the employable workforce, or things like that. But it specifies that it does this to sort of prevent, I'm going to mess up the language, but something like prevent undue advantage to some groups over others. Now, of course, when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, the equity piece is all about preventing undue advantage from being granted to some and undue burdens placed on others. So I say that in addition to the fact that the executive order really doesn't, ironically, the language of it doesn't really meaningfully change a lot of the pursuits that folks that have been doing this work for a long time have been up to. But what's more is that there's so much legislation on the books that counters this executive order, particularly on a state level, and particularly when you look at things like the Fair Pay Act or the anti-discrimination section of the Dodd-Frank Act. There's lots of reasons that this executive order can't really hold water when looked in the context of the other legal protections that we have in place. So the reason I say that a lot has changed, but even more remains the same, is because there really is, we're not yet in a place where this language of like DEI is illegal or DEI is being forced upon me or DEI is dead. That's not the case. And what we actually see is shareholder initiatives going to publicly traded boards seeking to upend diversity, equity, and inclusion. And many, many, many companies, many shareholders are voting against these anti-DEI proposals or propositions. So whether
Interesting.
like Apple, American Airlines, Caterpillar, IBM, MasterCard, the Boeing Company, all of these companies are saying, no, we're not going to stop diversity, equity, inclusion. So I always like to kind of myth bust on this notion that it's no longer allowed, or it's just not the case.
Well, that's extremely positive news that this is not the way that the whole nation feels. It's not the way all the companies, corporate America feels. They're standing up and saying, no, and we're not going to allow this. So that's really great news indeed. How are, the corporations, the shareholders, et cetera, how is that affecting your own personal coaching and consulting work?
Well, a lot more of our work is on this topic specifically, diversity, equity, inclusion, is focused on future proofing. So, how do I build for my company a culture strategy, a strategy that is impervious to some of this socio-political upheaval? And so, we're helping folks consider kind of audits and assessments of their practices for the purpose of ensuring sustainability in the long run. That's on the sort of systems level. I would say on the coaching and individual coaching side, we coach a lot of leaders who are maybe the only person at the table representing whatever it is they bring to the table. And what we're finding is a lot of folks, two things. One, needing more time and space for investing in their own resources and resilience. than a year ago. And then two, folks really building two key leadership behaviors in a way that they didn't have to previously, one of which we're calling principal dissent, which is, here are my values. I know what you're asking of me. They do not align. And so, on principle, I don't agree with this. Now let's figure that out. Let's figure this dissent out. And then the other behavior is coalition building. So we're seeing leaders having to build coalition across organizational lines to other companies, building their sort of personal board of directors in a new way to help them navigate what feels like murky territory in these times. And it's hard. I'll just be really straightforward. Folks aren't doing as well as they were in, let's just say a year ago for ease.
Yeah, boy. I can imagine. I mean, it's very wonky, meaning the cultures are changing, the leaderships are changing. And I think that comes down to an individual employee in the company saying, this is, I don't agree. Let's work it out. And maybe they get it worked out, maybe they don't.
And what and you know helping leaders understand what is my threshold, what is my sort of best alternative to a negotiated outcome, where do I draw the line, and what does that mean for my career, my family, the world around me, things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're seeing a lot of that. There's been like in Q1 of this year, I'm going to get the stats slightly wrong, but I think it was 152 CEOs of privately held or of private industry quit in the first quarter, which is, I guess, the largest number since this index was first recorded in 2002. And so you're seeing folks, now I don't know the why behind this 600 something number, but I am seeing clients on a principal basis say, I can't be caught with this ball that you're asking me to carry in a way that I haven't seen before.
Yeah. I think that's true for the environment overall, with not only DEI, but a number of things that are just, yeah, all of a sudden there's an edict that they have to follow and they just don't agree with it.
True, true.
Yeah.
And on so many topics, right?
And so
Healthcare,
many.
the
Yes.
environment, the
Yes.
list goes on and on.
I know. Yeah, it's yeah, a lot less tolerance for many things that are going on. So, Fran, looking ahead at, your next couple months into the fall, what are you excited about?
I'm most excited about a vacation I'm taking in July.
Woohoo! I get that.
I am excited about this notion that I just spoke about with regards to coalition building. So I was someone was recently asking me a question, how do you change the mind of someone who is just so vastly different from you, their perspective, what have you. And my response to that was, I actually don't see it as my job to change their mind. I see my job as building strength and community for those that maybe have a little bit of difference from me. Because I want to understand what I don't And so, like, if I am intentional in my local community and my coaching clients are intentional in their local communities about building coalition and community with folks that, frankly, after a few months of spending time with them, you're going to start rubbing up against one another and irritating each other, such that we can all grow in better support of one another as a kind of antidote to. Look, no matter what side of the political spectrum in the United States you're on today, we can all agree that media and social media is very divisive. It is promoting
Absolutely.
divergence of
Yes.
perspective. And what I find is that the sort of human antidote to that is spending time across difference with one another so that we can learn and come to a mutually agreeable outcome. Because oftentimes we are motivated by very similar needs, even
Absolutely.
if we have a different opinion about what it's going to take to get there. And that's why, at its core, I do the work that I do, is because that building connection across difference, I think, is what frankly humanity needs.
So well said. I mean, if really, if you strip off a few of the top layers, you find the values are the same between people. And that's very exciting. It's just allowing yourself to be open to, okay, this person looks different. Their skin is different. Their gender is different. Their, again, political party is different. And how do we come together in each other's best interest?
That's right. That's right. Because whether or not we like it, we are in it together. We have
Yes.
we are moving around the world in these human bodies that will encounter one another and need to, your neighbor or whomever you're interacting with.
Yes.
We have no option but to be in it together.
Right. And why not make that a positive experience versus one that's built out of fear somewhere, that somewhere along the lines you picked up? You know, why not try and open up, be genuinely curious and respectful?
Yes. And I think this fear piece that you mentioned is a big part of it. And in some instances, it's fear that we ourselves in our lifetime don't have responsibility for. Sometimes it is, but when I'm coaching executives, this is something that we often are grappling with, is what are the narratives that were written for me, irrespective of my role in them, that have made my next big executive challenge uniquely challenging. So whether it's, stepping into that next C-level role, or whether it is, giving that board presentation, or whatever it may be, there are these narratives that were written sort of, I'd say, like into the fascia of our bodies. How do we take the time to slow down, regulate our systems so that we acknowledge them for what they are? And that they're playing out a story that's not maybe as relevant to the challenge that's before me, but was super relevant maybe to my mother, or that teacher from kindergarten, or whatever it is. And getting a little bit of space from that so that I can tackle this challenge with my fresh eyes as opposed to someone else's.
It's great you're pointing out that you have to really look at your background, you know, how you grew up, where you grew up, what you were told, and if those beliefs are still with you today. Are they working? Are they serving you? Are they helping you to be the best person that you can, especially if you're an executive or a leader? What are you modeling to others in your company?
Yeah, really, really well put.
Yeah, that, yay. I know it's challenging, and that is challenging to really process and unpack those stories. I mean, you may have many, many stories beyond, again, the culture question, the diversity question, and it's so worth checking that out because those may be controlling you versus you having the ability to, again, as you said, take a step back, get some space around it, really question. And again, I question positive or negative in your life.
Because I'm always curious about what is a belief and what is a de facto way of being. So, and from where did this come? But I, you know, the other, I didn't mention this earlier, but the other critical leadership behavior, I think, to face what I've been calling the polycrisis of 2025 is regenerative leadership, meaning, am I taking the time to regulate my nervous system such that I can choose to be in a rest and digest mode at the appropriate times, which enable me to regenerate, to rebuild my stores, be able to role model, Jody, in the way that you were talking about role modeling for others, that, you know, it's safe to try something new, it's safe to fail, it's safe to admit that you don't know, and safe to acknowledge, this is, I'm playing out old stories, I'm playing old tapes that are no longer relevant to.
Well, there's just been so much change, and I'm gonna say so much chaos in our lives, in as you said, environment, culture, it just so many things that our nervous system is dysregulated, and it is time again to take care of yourself, to regenerate, to really think about who you are amidst the chaos. So I think that's very well said. Now, Fran, if somebody wants to get a hold of you and chat, potentially use your services, how should they go about that?
You can find us at goodworks.consulting. It's not a dot com, which is always helpful to specify, but goodworks.consulting. You can send us a message at info at goodworks.consulting. You can find me on LinkedIn, Fran Benjamin, and most happy to connect. I always joke that I'm one of the more caffeinated people that I know because I love a coffee chat. So, you know, always happy to get some time for coffee with folks.
Oh, I love that. Well, Fran, it's been a pleasure speaking with you and hearing about this topic, which, again, as I said when we opened up the conversation, thank you for being you, being in this role, unpacking things, understanding things, setting forward new agendas, potentially building coalitions between community and companies. And whew, thank you.
Oh my gosh, Jody, thank you so much for having me here. It's been such a pleasure. And thank you for the thoughtful questions and the platform to talk about some really important stuff. So appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. All right, you take care.
You too.
I'm so grateful that you've listened to the end of this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review it, and share it with your friends. I love teaching insights so that you can have a more impactful and meaningful life. It's my mission to build a thriving community of happy, fulfilled people. Want more? Visit my website at yourspectacularlife.com.